Well, thanks very much for being here today, and I'm really pleased to be here. I've been involved in the work for about two and a half years, and it's the one event in the year, it's my third time, the third event, isn't it, that I actually really and genuinely look forward to. And I was reflecting on this last night, wondering why I was so excited. And I realised that, I think I understand that, my day job is about this type of work, working in regions, working as part of one of the DH development organisations. And it's just a long, hard slog. But it's this work which makes a difference to me, because it's about all of me and not just the work part of me. So it's the one context and environment where I can feel open and honest. Although I'm out at work, there's a much more value for me in this work. So thanks for the chance to be involved in it. Okay, reducing health inequalities. We've got a subgroup, Rachel Munton's co-chair, and she asked me to extend her apologies today. She's tied up in a review in her trust. I put together these photographs, actually not using the ones that are on the DH website, but undoubtedly breaking copyright, and I won't tell you from where. But I find visual images really help me understand things better, if not at on a verbal level. But I've used the picture of the Florence Nightingale group from time to time, because it really is quite resonant for me, because I think it picks up some of the issues that Graham mentioned in the previous presentation. There's still an awful lot of prejudice around. There's still an awful lot of ignorance and naivety. But rather than approach it from a point of cynicism, I think we can see it as a challenge. And what I'd like to see is, you know, a closing of the gap between Victorian health service and the health service, health and social care services in the 21st century, or what I call Planet NHS. Okay, we've got a subgroup. Its role has changed over the year, really, and we're trying to learn as we go along. We've had meetings that are very business-focused, but latterly we've had a joint meeting with the Inclusive Services workstream. And we focus much more around development and thinking through strategy, where we've got to. So in a sense, it was a mini-annual meeting. But certainly I felt at the end of it, and I think my colleague Christine Trethewen felt afterwards, that the feedback and contribution was hugely valuable, and perhaps we need to work much more actively with our subgroup and colleagues rather than just focus on business and pushing things through in order to keep our views, our perspectives grounded and real. It throws up another issue for us, which is around leadership and capacity to do the work. I think all of us in the steering group and all the co-chairs tuck this work in around the edges of our day jobs. I'm very glad to hear there'll be more funding this year, but I think there's a continuing concern about how we implement what we've developed, as Christine mentioned, but really take advantage of a world that is opening up to us. It's really essential that the subgroup gives a very strong steer to the work, and I think we need to invest more time with colleagues in the subgroup, and to use the subgroup as a critical friend, because it's easy to think that ideas that are generated by people who are rushing between jobs, rushing between meetings, having hurried conversations with yourselves, are the right ideas, and I don't think that's always the case. So we need to be more thoughtful about our approach nationally as an alliance, which this group is as well. And again, I've mentioned we're looking forward to more programme support. Okay, this year's work. Well, the review of suicide in people with mental health problems, LGBT people with mental health problems, has been completed, but it's been stalled by awaiting publication. But we will hold a national launch this year, jointly with the Care Services Improvement Partnership, which sponsored the piece of work. It's going to be an important publication, and we're hoping it will be out very soon. That's Michael King's work. We had the second year of a mental health inpatient census, and in year two we succeeded in getting information around sexual orientation, and people were invited to record that. We've got some very very small amount of data back from the Mental Health Act Commission. And what we haven't been able to secure is an opportunity to take a closer look at the data to actually drill down into some of the variables. We're continuing to plug away at that particular problem. We've mentioned, and you've had a look at briefly, the what we're calling the 10 top tips paper. I've just seen it for the first time myself in hard copy, and I'm really very pleased with it, very proud with it. It's going to be really essential to think through how we get it out there into the field. In preparation is a series of briefing papers, which we envisage putting together as a briefing pack to hand out individually in terms of different briefing papers to different groups, so it's targeted, but also to produce a resources pack around LGBT health and social care equalities. And they're listed on the next slide. I'll go on to that. There's a paper in preparation which is called Homophobia Costs. It comes from discussions, if you remember, at last year's meeting, where it was felt important to put on the table what the real costs are of discrimination in health terms, and that would be speaking the language of commissioners. And that works in preparation. I think it's going to be an extremely important piece of work, and more important if we're able to target it at commissioners and directors of public health. Very late in the day, we've offered some support to Jan Bridget, who's done a phenomenal job building up the knowledge community, the resources on the knowledge community, and we'll find out more about that shortly. But I really would want to commend the work she's done, and it's just one example of many people in this country and across the UK who are incredibly dedicated to achieving equality. I've mentioned the joint development session. I think we may move more increasingly down that road of working in that way. This is just the list of the briefing papers. Now, this is the first list. We're on draft 3 or 4. Julie Fish at De Montfort University has been commissioned to produce them. She's done a really excellent job. And it's really quite tricky because you can appreciate there are a range of experts, hundreds of opinions, and actually editing and pulling it together as something that's coherent, it's brief, simple, and which could be used in a targeted way is really quite challenging. And in fact, we've got a fairly heavy-duty meeting after today's conference to try to agree a format and to get the balance right. Some other work we've done sort of individually in quite a piecemeal way, because we're quite limited by time as subgroup leads, is meeting with deputies of the Chief Nursing Officer and being directed towards and advised to work much more closely with specialist public health nurses and school nurses, particularly around the homophobic bullying agenda, and working with colleagues in the RCN. So that is an intended direction for this year. And we've linked in much more effectively, I think, with people working around the single equality scheme in the Equality and Human Rights Group in the department and with the Pacesetters programme as well. So it's not just networking outwards, it's also networking within the Department of Health. Okay, where some of the directions might be, well, we're looking to you to advise on this, but this is some of my thinking, really. I think we need to be, and we've said this for 2 years now, much more rigorous around communication, work much more smartly around it. Now, we've begun to see some products coming out, which I think are excellent and hugely promising, but actually what we do with them is going to be important. So, in a sense, I think we need to have a marketing strategy, but not just one that sits within the Department of Health, within SOGIAG, but actually which uses the networks out there and builds on networks and opportunities, avenues out there. The subgroups have advised more work with and around and focused on young people, young LGBT people, and older people as well. Really to focus on bullying in schools. I think we missed the boat a bit up with the LGBT History Month this year, and I think we need to re-energise that for next February. And we're looking to colleagues to be advising how to do that. There is a huge amount of evidence which we need to be presenting through the resources we're building on the web, but using and getting out there for other people to use, but also pulling together many more examples around positive practice, because it is those sorts of stories which influence people who are making decisions about spending money, planning, redesigning services. It's been recommended that we try to influence where R&D funding goes nationally, because LGBT interests seem to be very thin among the conventional R&D community. I don't know whether you'd agree with that, Ruth. Okay. And also keeping the profile of LGBT health equality is very much on the agenda at every level, nationally, regionally, within the health and social care system and without the health and social care system locally. Okay. There are some new territories opening up to us now with the changes in commissioning, with the restructuring within the NHS and with health authorities. Strategic planning is very much the flavour of the day with the government offices, that's the local government in the regions, and with health authorities, so we're working much more closely together. So that's a lever. Commissioning by PCTs, joint commissioning around health and social care services. Again, it's acknowledged that skills in commissioning are very limited, and it's also acknowledged that it's important that commissioning is done to the highest possible standard. So directors of public health in the regions and health authority chief execs are very aware of the need to be working with commissioners to upskill them, develop them, and again I think we can be taking advantage of that and getting in there. Much more locally, and this is where we need to be working with LGBT people in the communities and encouraging local ownership of the work, there will be strategic health needs or joint health needs assessments undertaken between health and social care. Where will LGBT health issues feature within those? Where is there good practice? Where are there friendly commissioners with whom we can work, who will be prepared to pin their colours to the mast and get LGBT into their health plans? Local involvement networks are the replacement for PPIs, patient and public involvement groups. Now they are being established as we speak. There are some, the Care Services Improvement Partnership nationally will have a role in establishing them, training links, they're known as links, in regions. And again, it won't be difficult, I think, to get our agenda onto theirs. But I think there's a lot of work we could do with in terms of building up capacity within the voluntary and community sector, and as I mentioned, the networks on the ground, forming alliances, forming partnerships, and allowing local voices to be heard. And again, we look to you really to advise on that. Okay, now when we move into commissioning, we've talked about writing commissioning guidance for LGBT health and social care, and I think I've come up with a branding of it, calling it Brokeback Commissioning. Thank you, Jan. and this is you won't be able to see it terribly well, it didn't transfer very well, but this is an example of some work that's going on in the region I live and work in, the South West. Now, we're bringing together the health and wellbeing partnerships across the region to do some development work with them around their emerging roles and functions. So that's a very powerful group, and it's being done work being done within the Government Office Southwest, within the Regional Public Health Group, and with the Health Authority. So this is effectively a learning set. Now, what we need to do is not only get in there, but to have resources, aids, materials for people to use readily, because equalities is still translates as race equality largely. And health inequalities, certainly in my experience with the public health colleagues in the regions, is still very much around targets around improving screening rates for sexually transmitted infection, reducing pregnancy in teenagers, reducing all age, all cause mortality. You know, it doesn't really think about the structural inequalities that we experience. And so that's the new frontier, actually, understanding that, being able to talk about it, being able to think through ways to change it and make a difference. Okay? So this is I've just thrown that up to give you an idea of what's possible now with some of the changes that are happening. But I look to you, finally, to advise on whether you think we are making a real difference. And I turn the question around. how can we make a real difference? How can we wipe out or how can we narrow the divide between the awareness, understanding, values, expectations, ambitions, aspirations, and demands of people who are discriminated against and people who are in positions of privilege? Okay? Thanks very much.